Blog Talk Radio.
Opportunities
to really put North Carolina in a tough spot. North Carolina, fought back. There was a big sequence where Harrison Barnes, who was awful, by the way, he was awful in this game. Harrison Barnes goes to the free throw line. North Carolina's down. North Carolina, I believe, was down by four. Makes one or two, then gets a rebound off, gets an offensive rebound, gets the ball, gets kicked back to him, and he ties the game with a three. That was a huge play in that game. He cut 4 points in basically one possession. So that was a huge play in that game. Reggie Bullock was the MVP of the game for North Carolina without question. He made some big threes. He locked up one of their perimeter players defensively. He was tremendous, has been good throughout the course of this tournament. And he made some tremendous plays for North Carolina as North Carolina took over in overtime. Listen, I don't know moving forward. I don't know about Marshall's status for Sunday. I would assume that he's not going to play, that he probably is done for the tournament. I just don't see how his wrist is going to magically all of a sudden get better over the course of a couple of days, or even if they make it to the Final Four, even a course of a week. I don't see it happening. I mean, again, North Carolina looks like with him, they look arguably the best team in the country with him. Without him, they look like barely a top 25 team. They're barely a top 25 without him. That's what they looked like last night. So we'll see what happens moving forward. Of course, North Carolina will play Kansas, who had some struggles of their own. If you want to know how to lose a game, or how almost to lose the game, watch the last 5 minutes of that Kansas-North Carolina State game, or the last three or four minutes. Kansas has an 8-point lead. They start taking dumb shots. They start turning the ball over left and right, missing free throws. I mean, North Carolina State could have easily won that game. I mean, North Carolina State could have easily won that game. I mean, Kansas, I walked away from the North Carolina game thinking, how in the world is North Carolina going to beat either Kansas or North Carolina State? North Carolina certainly has more than a legit chance against Kansas, even without Marshall, the way Kansas is playing right now. Kansas, listen, Bill Self was all over it. He says, hey guys, we're not playing well right now. You should be happy, but don't be excited. Because we're not shooting the ball. Tyshawn Taylor looks lost. Thomas Robinson hasn't played well. They don't look good right now at all. That would be a very interesting game for more reasons than the obvious, with Roy Williams formerly coaching Kansas and leaving them back in 2003 after that loss to Syracuse in the national championship game. But Kansas is not like North Carolina lost their point guard. Kansas, their excuse for not playing well is beyond me. I don't know what is wrong with Kansas. Maybe they're due for a big game. Who knows? But they were fortunate. And I mean fortunate to win that game last night against North Carolina State. North Carolina State easily could have won that game. North Carolina State played well in the first half. Kansas came out with a big run to start the second half. After that, you thought Kansas was in great shape and with win going away, but that was not the case. As North Carolina State hung in there, and Kansas, there was some help from Kansas. And, again, Kansas did not look good last night. So you're going to have your Midwest Regional Final, North Carolina versus Kansas at 1-2. Should be a great matchup. We'll talk more about that over the course of the program. Also, last night, of course, you had Baylor and Kentucky advancing. Kentucky gave you the performance of the tournament. I mean, let's be honest. I don't like it. That is the poll question of the morning. Which remaining team has the best chance to beat Kentucky? And I had, Kansas, Baylor, Syracuse, and Louisville. I didn't put North Carolina on there because without Kendall Marshall, they have no chance to beat Kentucky. Kentucky showed you last night why they are the odds on, and now seemingly as the tournament moves along, becoming the prohibited favorites to win this thing. Indiana played great last night. Okay, Indiana shot the ball. They shot the lights out. They were not afraid of Kentucky. They went toe-to-toe with them. 3-point game at the half. They scored 90 points on Kentucky. Kentucky's one of the best defensive teams in the country. Indiana puts 90 on them, and Kentucky says, okay, we'll go up another gear. That was a virtuoso performance by the Kentucky Wildcats from every year. And they got, I think a point was made that Kentucky, you can't zero in on one guy for Kentucky. That's how deep they are. They have so many weapons. You can't zero in on just one particular guy. No longer no longer do they need Terrence Jones to go out there and, you know, their temperature is not taken by whether or not Terrence Jones shows up to play. It doesn't matter anymore. The rest of that team, Gilchrist, Anthony Davis, Lamb, the rest of that team is just too good. So, again, they're going to be a tough, tough out. They are, again, clearly have established themselves, especially with North Carolina, with the Kendall Marshall injury, clearly established themselves as the team to beat. They'll play a Baylor team that, you know, that game, Baylor and Xavier, typified Baylor season. Baylor, at times, can look like the best team in the country, even as good as Kentucky, as good as a healthy North Carolina. But then there are times where Baylor just falls asleep at the will and a 19-point lead turns into a 4-point lead. And there's no way Xavier should have been in that game late in the second half. But, you know, give Xavier some credit for hanging around. But that, you know, Baylor is so inconsistent. They're so inconsistent. Now, again, Baylor, Kentucky, we'll talk more about that. Baylor has the physical talent to beat Kentucky. Physically, Kentucky, they will not be overwhelmed by Kentucky at all. But can they, the consistency, you know, they have a bad drought because Kentucky can hit them with a 20 to 5 run, just like, you know, within the snap of your fingers. So if you're a college basketball fan, you have to love what you saw last night. The Friday night of the Sweet 16 has always been my favorite night of the tournament because that's when, to me, you seem to get some bigger – that's when, to me, big upsets occur as far as some of the top seeds. You know, that's when you seem to get some classic games over the course of that – on that particular night. And last night was no different. And now you have an Elite Eight where you're going to have 7 of the 8 teams are amongst the top 16 seeds. You're going to have 3 number ones. You're going to have 2 1-versus-2 matchups. Syracuse scores tonight. Syracuse, Ohio State. You're going to have the worst matchup out of all these 4 matchups is Louisville against Florida. Okay, and Louisville's playing great right now. And Florida, we talked about it before the tournament started, is not a number 7 seed. They're not. They're much better than that. And then, of course, tomorrow you'll get Baylor, Kentucky, 1-versus-3, and then to cap it off, you'll get the Kansas, North Carolina, 1-versus-2 matchup that will complete the Final Four as we head towards New Orleans. Should be a great set of games. We'll talk more about the games later on in the program on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 12 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this 24th of March, 2012. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can always follow me at twitter.com/SurrealQuinn or hit me up on twitter.com/William Gerald or hit me up on facebook.com/SurrealQuinn or go to my new website, SurrealGeraldQuinn.com. When we return, we'll have some Saturday morning headlines, and we'll get into some NBA as it was a classic matchup last night, a classic game, I should say, last night. We'll talk about more about that on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Must be crazy. Can't see them. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. As we discuss the world of sports, big weekend of sports in general, with the NCAA tournament and also baseball, you know, baseball almost not that long, baseball about to wrap up spring training as we head towards the regular season. Just 2 weeks left, basically, of spring training before the regular season starts April 5th. I think it is April 4th. April 4th is the opening night. That annoys me about baseball, having an opening night before opening day. I think it's stupid. But, you know, TV dominates these things. So it is, you know, kind of is what it is. 347-215-6180. Saturday morning headlines. Tiger Woods has a share of the lead at the Arnold Palmer Invitational at 10 under. Second round, he shoots 7 under, 65 for the second round. Tied with Charlie Wee. Woods has not won a tournament, okay, a regular tournament, sanctioned tournament, since the 2009 Tour Championship. He hasn't held a weekend lead. Excuse me. He hasn't won a Tour Championship since the BMW Championship. He hasn't held a lead going into the weekend since the 2009 Tour Championship. That is remarkable. I mean, I knew it had been a while since he won a tournament, you know, 2 or 3 years, but I didn't know that it had been that long since he held a lead going into the third round. I mean, that is, you know, and the reason why I bring that up is this is a big tournament for Tiger Woods, okay? It's a big tournament. I'll be keeping my eyes on it without question. It's a huge tournament for Tiger Woods. And you say to yourself, I never thought it would get to a point in his career where you would say a non-major is big. No, this is big. He needs to finish. He needs to win this tournament. Not finish second, not losing the playoff. He needs to win this tournament. Masters is about 3 weeks away, following, you know, right after the Final Four. And it's just, you know, this sport needs him to win this tournament. If you're golf, you want Tiger Woods going in. First of all, he looks healthy, which is the most important thing. He's healthy, clearly healthy. He got a little scare with the Achilles a couple of weeks ago. That looks fine. So clearly he's healthy, as playing this well in the first two rounds of this tournament. But he needs to win a tournament. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's, you know, this season, you look at this season, he's played well. I mean, he's played well. He's been top five in some tournaments, you know, finished. He's been relevant on Sunday afternoon. But this is Tiger Woods. You know, this is not your average golfer here. This is not me and you getting on the course. Being relevant is not good enough. You know, that's not the standard for one Tiger Woods. Needs to win this tournament. So me certainly keeping my eye on this particular tournament as Woods tries to break this long drought before the Masters commences in a couple of weeks. Yankee reliever Jobe Chamberlain suffered an ankle dislocation playing with his son jumping on a trampoline. Now, I love kids, okay? And, you know, I'm not going to sit up here and knock, you know, a father for spending time with his kids, with his son. But, you know, there's common sense and then there's common sense. Like, dude, why are you on your livelihood is at stake when you're involved in a physical activity, whether it's a basketball game, you know, playing basketball, you gotta be smarter. I mean, this, you know, there are some whispers that this could be a career-threatening injury. I mean, there's no question about this. Like, you, dude, I just don't get it. I don't get it. On a trampoline? I mean, like, don't play. I mean, take your son out to out in the backyard, throw the football. Throw the football around. Do something that's non-conversational. You know, wrestle with your son. Depending on if he's, I don't know, 5, 6, I don't know how old his kids are. You're jumping on a trampoline. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm sure the Yankees are thrilled. Oh my goodness, I'm sure they're just thrilled. I mean, he is a part, big part of part of their bullpen. I don't know. I mean, he just it's just not the it is not the smartest thing whatsoever. Jomo Chamberlain, this definitely could have fell on. Are you kidding me? This definitely could. This I thought about that. It's when I was coming out with this. I read the story, heard about the story, but bad news for the Yankees. And, that is, that's a significant loss in the for your bullpen. And who knows? Maybe, I don't know what they're gonna, how they're gonna address it with the season being right around the corner. Maybe, they have a bunch of stars. Maybe, they put a Phil Hughes, somebody like that, back in the bullpen. Who knows? But this, but Jomo Chamberlain, I'm not a doctor, but I almost would be surprised if he pitched this year. I almost would be surprised if he pitched this year. I really would. I mean, ankle dislocation. There's talk that you have. There's so many things that go along with it. When a bone just basically comes out the skin, then you have to, make sure it doesn't get an infection. And there's so many parts to it that, who knows? Again, it could be a career-threatening injury. Who knows when he'll be, when he will be back? 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll get into some NBA before we continue our baseball preview of the NL West. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 23 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Again, a lot to do. We have a bunch of NFL stuff with to do in terms of with the Saints and the Tim Tebow situation with the Jets. So we'll get to that. And as a matter of fact, by the way, the Tim Tebow trade will be cleared by 4 o'clock this afternoon. So, if you are a Tim Tebow lover and you just if you were nervous about him going to New York, he's gonna be in New York, so don't you have nothing to worry about from that standpoint. Let's talk into some NBA here, and as the NBA nears, regular season has about a month left before you get to the playoffs. Last night, of course, you had one of those wild games that you see every so often. Oklahoma City and Minnesota, 149-140. Oklahoma City gets the win at home against, again, an improving Minnesota team that's playing without Ricky Rubio, unfortunately. Double overtime, Kevin Love, 51 points, 14 rebounds, best power forward in the league. Okay, best power forward in the league. I don't think there's any question in my mind. And Kevin Durant, 40 points, 17 rebounds. Russell Westbrook had 45 points. James Harden had 25 points. So you basically got well over 100 points out of like three players. I mean, Durant and Westbrook combined for, 85 points, 85 points. So basically, you got 120 points, excuse me, 115 points or so, 110 points out of three players. And again, that is the concern. And J.J. Barea, by the way, had a triple-double. I think the first Latin player in NBA history to ever have a triple-double. He had a big game as well. But that is the concern if you're an Oklahoma City fan. Not the fact that you struggle to beat Minnesota. Minnesota's played hard and played well this year all year long, even without Rubio. And they still have some nice pieces, a ton of talent, some nice pieces on their team without Rubio. But the fact that you only have three scorers, and none of them are low post or have a low post presence. Now, Durant and Westbrook do live in the paint, especially Westbrook. Westbrook, I think, is number one in the NBA in terms of guards, maybe number two behind Tony Parker in terms of points in the paint from the guard position. Durant gets to the foul line. But there's nobody that they can throw the ball down to in the low post and say, yo, go get me a bucket. And again, just having three scorers, those nights with Durant, maybe a little off, or Westbrook has one of those 5-for-18 nights, which he's certainly possible to have. What are you going to do in the playoffs? So that, to me, would be a concern. That's why I was surprised that Oklahoma City did not address it's hard to get a quality big man. We know they don't, those are like endangered species as far as the NBA goes. As far as the NBA goes right now, but you have to go out there. They should have went out there and got another scorer to come off the bench. Somebody can give you, 10 to 15 points. Somebody can give you a spark off the bench in terms of putting points, putting biscuit in the basket. So I would definitely be concerned from that standpoint if I was an Oklahoma City fan. Plus, it comes down to the matchups as well. I mean, Oklahoma City does not. Let's just call it what it is. They don't match up with the San Antonio Spurs for whatever reason. The Spurs just have their way with it without this own Oklahoma City. So that is the team. And right now, they wouldn't play them until the Western Conference Finals. As it stands, the Spurs are number two, Oklahoma City's number one in the Western Conference. But, it's going to be a very interesting stretch of games, especially in the Western Conference. It's basically going to be depending on who matches up with who. Last night, Toronto snapped the Knicks' five-game winning streak in emphatic fashion, 96-79. Knicks come up, after winning five straight, playing well, the Knicks go out there and have an embarrassing performance against the Raptors. And the reason why I bring up the Knicks is Carmelo Anthony comes out earlier this week that Carmelo Anthony basically was not playing hard for Mike D'Antoni, and that now all of a sudden he has a jump in his a hop in his step. He's playing with more intensity. And this is the reason why I feel like, and I thought this for a while, long time now, why Carmelo Anthony is not an elite and a superstar player, besides the fact that he's one dimensional as far as Yes, we know he can score, but he's not a leader. He doesn't make other people better around him. But he's one of the best scorers in the league, and frankly, one of the best, one of the most complete offensive players in the league. He post up, shoot, handle the ball, can do a lot of things. But again, you go out there and you're basically, I don't want to say tanking it to get D'Antoni fired, but you're basically going through the motions. And now all of a sudden, Winston gets hired. Now all of a sudden, you have your mojo back. Listen, it doesn't work that way if you're a superstar. I mean, it doesn't work. Your job is, if you are a starter team, in which he is to bring it every single night. I mean, just from I'm sure Kobe Bryant wasn't thrilled, wasn't thrilled about a couple coaches other than Phil Jackson. I mean, yeah, Rui Tomjanovich and I'm thinking. I'm trying to think of the Frank. I'm trying to think of the assistant that was under had Rui Tomjanovich. Can't think of the other guy who took over after Tomjanovich had took the medical leave. But regardless, I mean, Bryant's still running an A game. I mean, you don't take nights off. You don't take nights off if you're that level of player. And again, this is to me a reason why the Knicks in the off season, or they should, or even before trade line this season, should have got rid of Carmelo Anthony. Should have got rid of him and should look to move him in the off season. But depending on who's the coach next year, we'll see who's the coach next year. If it's not Phil Jackson, I would move him. I'll put you that way. If it's not Phil Jackson, you have to move him. So, again, and with that being said, the Knicks are still right in the thick of the playoff race, as the bottom of the Eastern Conference is brutal. The Knicks right now are the eighth seed. If the playoffs were to end right now, they would play the Chicago Bulls in the first round. So we'll see what happens. Again, all the moves have been made. These teams are who they are. The West to me is much more intriguing because in the East you know who are the cream of the crop are. I mean, There's the Bulls and Heat. Only question about that is, Derrick Rose's, how serious is his injury? He's missed a lot. He's missed a lot of games here. I'll be a little concerned about that if I'm a Chicago Bulls fan. The Western Conference, again, is all over the place. Starting to be some separation amongst those top three between Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and the Lakers a little bit. But you still have Memphis and the Clippers and Dallas in the mix. And Utah, now all of a sudden, has gotten hot. Won six straight and got themselves, including a home win, beating the Lakers at in LA last weekend. So Utah, Houston round out the playoffs. Both tied with the same record. Denver as well. Denver and Houston, Utah all have the same record. Phoenix is still in the mix. Minnesota, to a lesser extent, is still in the mix. So still a lot to be decided in the Western Conference. In terms of what can transpire over the course of the rest of the regular season. When we return on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will look ahead towards some baseball. We'll preview the NL West. Can the Giants recapture the magic of 2010 and win again, or has Arizona just taken over this division? We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We're going to shift gears a bit. Still a ton of NFL to do. We'll get back to the college basketball. But, of course, the baseball season is coming upon us. Certainly an exciting time as hope springs eternal for teams who, you know, may not have been, who certainly were not playoff contenders and are looking, you know, are looking to be the next Tampa Bay Devil Rays or team of that magnitude. We're going to move on to the NL West, where last year, of course, the Arizona Diamondbacks ran away with the division in September as they went through the then defending world champion San Francisco Giants. I believe won that game by eight and a half games. To me, I still say, despite what Arizona did last year, that San Francisco is a team to beat in this division. San Francisco possesses arguably the best starting pitching staff, the best pitching staff in the National League. Certainly, I mean, Philly's probably had the best starting staff with their top three, but San Francisco is not far behind. When you talk about Lincecum, Kane, and Bumgarner, Kane and Lincecum are, you know, Lincecum, again, last year was much better than what his record indicated. He got no run support. And Kane, likewise, as well. Again, their bullpen, and Brian Wilson's banged up right now. Will he start off the season remains to be seen. But they have a very deep bullpen. Question about the Giants has been, and seemingly has been since Barry Bonds was there, or since Barry Bonds retired, has been the offense. Can the Giants score enough runs? You know, the Giants last year, you know, every game was 2-1, 3-2, 4-3, 1-0. You know, can they score enough runs? Now, certainly it will help that Buster Posey, who many think, and I'm included with this line of thinking, that can be a guy who has a chance to be an MVP type candidate. He had a tremendous rookie season, was a big reason why they won the championship in 2010. You can't underestimate enough how big a loss that was last season when he went down after being, you know, ran over in that collision at home plate. So him coming back adds that, you know, that's like adding a big time free agent to your team without giving up anything. That will definitely improve the offense. They have Melky Cabrera. You know, they need Pablo Sandoval to be 25, 90, or 30, 100, and they're looking for bounce back gears. I'll say Aubrey Huff, guys of that nature. So I think that they will be, you know, improved offensively. I think they will. And listen, they don't need to be the 27 Yankees with that pitching staff. I mean, that pitching staff is going to keep them in more games than not. And I think that they will win this division and return back to the playoffs, as they again try to win their second championship in 3 years. The team that's next in line in this division is Arizona. Arizona has very good pitching. You know, when you begin with Ian Kennedy, who won 21 games last year, with Kennedy, Daniel Hudson, Trevor Cahill, that has a strong starting staff. They have a very good bullpen with J.J. Putz, Daniel Hernandez, guys like that. I like the bench from Arizona. You know, Henry Blanco, Jeff Blum, Willie Bloomquist, very deep experience off the bench. Their lineup is, I think their lineup is good, not great. Stephen Drew will probably start off the season on the disabled list. They still haven't decided who's going to be hit leadoff. Justin Upton has a chance to be a star. You have Chris Young. They got Jason Kubo. Still not a great lineup, but a lineup that can, you know, a lineup that is pretty good, not great. The thing about Arizona is, and I picked them to go second by default because I don't think the division is, you know, I don't see anybody else in the division that's better than them. To be honest with you, I don't like, you know, teams that have these years that come out of nowhere, which Arizona did last year. You know, can they, you know, can they capture that similar magic in back-to-back years? It's one thing about baseball. You know, unless your payroll, you know, you have a Yankee, Philly, Red Sox type payroll, it is hard to be good year after year after year. I mean, it's going to be a drop off in some way, shape, or form. Especially if you're one of these teams that that just came out of nowhere. And Arizona last year came out of nowhere. I mean, everybody thought that, you know, Giants, Dodgers, those teams like that. Arizona came out absolutely, Colorado to a lesser extent. Arizona absolutely came out of nowhere to get to where they were at. Again, can they do that again in back-to-back years where they dominated the division? You know, I don't think that's going to happen, but I think they're definitely, no, to me, in this division, they are no worse than the second place team. That's where I think that they will finish. As far as the wild card of the division, the team that can go in either direction, I would say the Dodgers. The Dodgers, I think, have very good pitching, especially when you can start on opening day, one of the best pitchers in baseball, in Clayton Kershaw last year. Of course, won the Cy Young, 21-5. Followed up by Billingsley and Ted Lilly. They get Chris Capone. Of course, you know, their question is, and it's almost a question of every starting staff in baseball, just about, is their fourth and fifth starters, Capone and Aaron Harang. The bullpen is not great by any stretch of the imagination. So that, you know, that could possibly be a hindrance to them, you know, moving forward. Lineup, again, you have one of the best players in the league in Matt Kemp, a guy who I thought should have been the MVP last year, to be honest with you. You know, Matt Kemp, Andre Ether, James Loney have a pretty decent lineup. At the top, I have question marks with D. Gordon and Mark Ellis. How much production can those guys give you at top? Juan Rivera, you know, he's okay, but how much do you want to count on Juan Rivera? Right now, he would be projected to bat fifth. So the lineup is okay. There's, you know, the Dodgers' main thing to me, what they have going for them, again, they have two of the best players at their particular positions in Kemp in their lineup and Clayton Kershaw pitching wise. And when you have that, when you're fighting for a playoff spot, and I think the Dodgers will be a contender for a wild card, that could be the difference between you not going to the playoffs versus you making the playoffs versus you not going. Now, again, they're going to need some help because both Kemp and Kershaw were great last year in the Giants, and the Dodgers didn't sniff the playoffs. But again, I think with the McCourt thing being basically behind them, they're going to have new ownership in soon. I think the Dodgers are going to have a nice little bounce back year and be amongst and contend for this division. I think the Dodgers certainly can contend for this division. I don't see the Giants or the Diamondbacks running away with this particular division. The Rockies obviously have a lot of great offensive talent. When you talk about, you know, Carlos Gonzalez, Tulowitzki, they get Michael Kadir. They, you know, Helton is hitting six. Casey Blake hitting eight. I mean, they have, obviously, they're going to score some runs. The problem with Colorado is the pitching staff is just dreadful, especially their starting pitching staff. I mean, Jeremy Guffrey, you know, Drew Pomeranz. They have guys who you say, who are you? Like, they're going to really struggle pitching-wise. Now, Jeremy Guffrey has talent, we all know, but, you know, he was terrible last year with Baltimore. Jorge De La Rosa will be back by June, which will certainly help that starting pitcher staff. The bullpen is okay. It's okay with Betancourt as the closer. So, they have some decent arms in the bullpen. The thing is, how, you know, them getting to the bullpen, that'll be the challenge for the Rockies. They're going to score runs. I mean, I think they have the best, to me, have the best offense in the division. But the question is, again, the pitching. Remember, this is a pitching-oriented division with the ballparks and what have you, minus Colorado's ballpark. So if you can't pitch in this division, you're going to be struggling. You're going to struggle, to say the least. San Diego is San Diego. I mean, San Diego is not, you know, they are clearly rebuilding. Let me give you some of the names on San Diego's roster. Just bear with me. Now, got a good. They have a good closer, Hudson Street. Okay, they have a good closer. You get to start their rotation: Tim Stauffer, Corey Lubick, Edison Volcas, who the Reds just gave away, Clayton Richard, and their fifth starter is still up in the air: Dustin Mosley, Anthony Bass, Mekhi Owens. You know, this is San Diego. I mean, their lineup. They did get Carlos Quentin. You know, Jason Bartlett or Orlando Hudson. Like, they don't even know what their lineup's going to be. I mean, Cameron Maybin, Will Venable. Like, San Diego, listen, their years with San Diego comes out of nowhere and shocks the world. People look at their lineup, they look at their players, and they say, oh, they're not going to do anything. The next thing you know, they're contending for the division. This is not going to be one of these years. San Diego clearly, now maybe they'll finish ahead of Colorado, maybe because they'll, I don't know. But San Diego will finish no higher than fourth in this division. I think that they're going to finish last, to be honest with you. This is going to be one of these years where, you know, they're just going to struggle. They're going to struggle with Meyerly, and they don't, like, no longer do they have, I mean, at least last year, you know, you had Heath Bell. They had a great bullpen. Once they got to the 6-7 inning, if they got to the 6-7 inning with a lead, the game was basically over because of that bullpen. That is no longer the case. And they're going to it's going to be a long year out there in San Diego, to say at least. So I like the Giants to come back and win the division. I like Arizona to finish in second. I think the Dodgers can be the team that can go either, you know, Dodgers could be – can finish in last, or Dodgers can possibly compete with the Giants and Diamondbacks. Rockies will be entertaining. They'll score some runs, be entertaining, but they're not a threat at all to win the division or to make a run the wild card. And, of course, San Diego is San Diego. They're going to have a very, very long year. When we return, don't mess with the Duke. We'll talk about the New Orleans Saints bounty situation, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.
Something, you should be aware of something like that in your organization. And that is his direct responsibility as a supervisor of coaches and players. He should have known what was going on in his organization. There is a tremendous amount of information corroborated by several different sources that's very clear that this was happening on a regular basis. It was clearly out of control, that they identified specific players and targeted them for injury.
That is, of course, the Duke, Roger Goodell, laying down the law, talking about, of course, the suspensions of one Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis, and certainly and Greg Williams as well. Let's not forget about him. As the Saints get just ran through by Roger Goodell, smacked harder than basically any franchise I can remember in recent memory in professional sports. Greg Williams gets suspended a year indefinitely, and that meaning that he, even after that year, there has to be an evaluation on whether or not he's going to be allowed to coach in the league again or be back in the league following the 2012 season. Payton will be eligible the day after the Super Bowl in 2013. And, of course, Loomis got the lightest of the penalty, getting suspended the first 8 games of the regular season. Listen, if you don't know by now, Roger Goodell is not the guy who you want to cross. Michael Vick, Pac-Man Jones, you know, I don't get, like, at this point, I just don't get these guys, or people within the league thinking that Goodell is going to, you know, give them light penalties, like, going to take it easy on them. I mean, Goodell, you know, he's going, if he has the opportunity to make an example out of you, he's going to make the example out of you. I didn't see this coming. You know, I thought, 4 or 5 games, something like that, maybe 6. A year without coaching, a year where you're going to lose $5.8 million of your $7 million salary. And frankly, you know, Payton should be happy to be walking away with this. You know, basically you're getting paid $1.2 million to do nothing. Okay, you should be happy. Now, maybe he's done some stuff with the draft, but he's suspended, you know, as of, I believe, April 1st. I believe his suspension starts. So I'm sure he's done some stuff contributing to the draft. He's going to get basically $1.2 million to do nothing. I mean, just sit around. He can't be around any of the practice facilities. I'm sure, I don't know how it works in terms of him contacting the players. I'm sure, I mean, I don't think the NFL can monitor him to tap his phone. So I would think that he'll probably be, you know, talking to Drew Brees. If I'm him, I don't even go that far. I'm like, maybe I don't text Drew Brees. I don't Facebook Drew Brees. I think if you are Sean Payton, you just disappear for a year and hope that you have a job moving forward in 2013. Greg Williams may never work in the NFL again. Never. I mean, they can, you know, he's a great defensive coordinator, but you know what? Much easier to replace a defensive coordinator than is a head coach. Payton has a Super Bowl ring. He helped, you know, along with Drew Brees, helped revitalize that franchise. But even with that being said, there's a chance that he won't be back for 2013. I mean, Tom Benson might just say, you know what? It's time to completely turn the page. We're just going to clean house and start over again. And who wouldn't want to coach the New Orleans Saints with Drew Brees? Who wouldn't want to live in New Orleans? I mean, it is a very, they, you know, that is one, they are one of the best top franchises in football right now. Point blank. So I don't know if Sean Payton is going to have a job come, you know, next year. I really don't. Greg Williams could be, like I said, his NFL career could be done. It really could be. I think he eventually will get back in, but minimum 3 years. Minimum 3 years. Nobody even sniffs him for 2 years. Maybe that third year he gets back. But there's no way. I mean, Greg Williams, again, it wouldn't shock me if he never coached football again. If he never coached the NFL again, it would not surprise me in the least bit. Not the least bit. Now, moving forward, I mean, if you're the Saints, you know, Drew Brees is not signed. You don't have a head coach. I would think that Steve Spagnuolo would be the slight favorite. I know Pete Carmichael is the offensive coordinator, but Spagnuolo would be the slight favorite to get that job, considering he does have head coaching, NFL head coaching experience. And if you're if you are Drew Brees' agent right now, you call the Saints and say, look, Drew Brees, I want Drew Brees to be the highest paid player in the history of the NFL. Take it or leave it. And that's where we're starting out at. I said because right now Drew Brees has all the leverage right now. Like he will be the face. He's already the face of the franchise, but they need Drew Brees more than ever right now. Like you have no leverage if you're the same organization. None. So you don't forget about the franchise thing. Forget about that. Get him a contract and write a blank check. Give him a blank check and let him and say, Drew, what do you want? I mean, that is the state of the New Orleans Saints right now. And you heard your boy Greer come out and say, we'll be fine, we're gonna stand together, this is New Orleans, and that's fine. That's fine. But as a team, I see that the Saints to me are not a contender. I mean, they've been dropped down a couple pegs. You don't lose a Sean Payton. I mean, Sean Payton is one of the best coaches in the league. You don't lose a guy of that magnitude and think that you're just going to, the pieces are, they think that you're just going to, go along business as usual. And NFL coaching means as much in NFL as any other sport by far and away, easily. So I think the Saints will be a playoff contender. I think they'll be middle of the pack on that, between 8, 9, 7. I don't think that they are not, to me, before this happened, they were one of the top five teams in the league, and certainly a Super Bowl contender. That's over with. That is done. And the odds were against them anyway, based on the fact that nobody in that division has won the division since realignment back in 2002 season. Nobody has won the division more than two times in a row. Back-to-back years anyway. So things are already, the odds were already against them even before all this transpired. Three four seven 215-6180 is your call number. We're coming up to the top of the hour, 12 o'clock. Still have another half hour to go on this special 90-minute edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Again, the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call poll question of the morning is, who has the best team? Which team has the best chance to beat Kentucky, Kansas, Syracuse, Baylor, or Louisville? Which team can stop the Kentucky Express? Kentucky playing great right now. We'll talk more about that when we return. We'll get into some React quotes, as well as Peyton Manning. We'll talk about that and much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Thank you. 12 o'clock on this special edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 90 Minutes, as we discuss the world of sports. We're going to get into some React quotes. I will not stay long because he said, you have done enough. You have made yourself famous, but this is harmful. That is coming from Manny Pacquiao, who claims that God wants him to retire. Now, listen, I'm not going to sit up here and knock a guy for his religious beliefs or claim that, you know, he's lying when God speaks to him. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. But I'll say this. If you indeed decide to retire and quote unquote God has told you to retire, stay retired. Because you hear this from these athletes and entertainers all the time. Well, what God tells them to do, what God doesn't tell them to do. And then 20 seconds later, God tells them to go in the opposite direction. When, you know, a boatload of money, you know, comes right behind them. So Manny Pacquiao, and he hasn't officially retired yet, let me make that clear, hasn't retired. But if Manny Pacquiao goes out there and in the next couple of weeks says, you know what, I'm done, I'm retiring, that's it, it's been a great career, and, you know, God, this is what my direction, this is the direction that God wants me to go in. And from what I understand and from what I've read, he's a very deeply spiritual and religious person, which is fine. But again, I don't want to hear from you ever again then, in terms of being in a boxing ring. I don't. And that's when you see Manny Pacquiao can go out there, he can easily say, you know, I'm retiring, I've had enough, got plenty of money, time to move on. And then 6 months later, come back and say, you know what, I changed my mind. And that's no problem with that. You see these guys change their minds all the time. You see guys come out of retirement. It happens all the time in sports. But when you put, you know, when you put God's name into it, you're going to open yourself up, you know, for criticism. It's just going, you know, and shit, he probably doesn't even care, to be honest with you. But my point is this, you know, I don't want to hear you talking about God and then Floyd Mayweather says, hey, Manny, how about $60 million? Let's do this. And then you, the God told me to take God told me that, you know, it's time for me to get back in the ring and do what makes me happy. And it happens all the time. It happens all the time with these guys. Satisfaction is the enemy of success. That is coming from Hank Haney's book called Tiger Woods. Hank Haney's book called The Big Miss, which will come out, which talks about, of course, the 6 years that he spent with Tiger Woods. And it's going to come out right before the Masters. Listen, you know, if I'm Hank Haney, you know, in those 6 years, Woods won a lot of majors, and Woods got rid of Haney. If I'm Hank Haney, other than financial gains, I don't know what you have to gain with this book on Tiger Woods. I really don't. And it's gotten to a point to where, Tiger Woods did was stupid. You know, the whole November 2009 thing, you know, he hasn't been the same since that whole little accident in Florida, and details on that have always been sketchy, to say the least. But, you know, it's time to move on if you're Hank Haney. Like, you have other players who you work with. I believe he works with, I don't think he works with Adam Scott. I mean, Hank Haney has become a big, you became Hank Haney because of Tiger Woods. You had the Hank Haney, you would not have the Hank Haney project if not for Tiger Woods, where you take these celebrities who couldn't play golf to save their lives and try to fix their swings. That's Tiger Woods. I mean, nobody would even know. Like, you wouldn't have any draw without Tiger Woods. So, to me, you know, he just needs to be a little bit more grateful that he was able to work with Tiger Woods and that he was able to. And how many millions of dollars has he made off Tiger Woods, to be honest with you? So, again, you know, I'm not going to read the book. I have no interest in the book whatsoever. But I just find it interesting to see that, you know, Tiger, people get fired all the time and people get let go. And I don't think Woods did anything to Hank Haney. He's, hey, it's time, you know, it's time to move on. It's time for me to move on. It's time for you to move on. That's, you know, that's business. So we'll see. It'll be very interesting to see how this book is received. Again, I won't read it. There's nothing in that book that frankly interests me at that point, especially around the time when the Masters is going to be happening. So we'll see what happens with that. When we return, we will talk. We will get into some Peyton Manning and also some Tim Tebow as the Jets and Denver head in opposite directions. We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. This latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. Call number is 215-347-215-6180. As we discuss the world of sports, Tim Tebow, again, is going to be a New York Jet. The trade will be official come 4 p.m. this afternoon. And, you know, right now, I mean, he could have went to a worse place in the NFL than the New York Jets. The Jets get Tim Tebow, give away draft picks to get Tim Tebow. Sperano's going to come in here with the Wildcat. Remember, Sperano in Miami ran the Wildcat with Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams. Started out very successful. They ran it better than anybody and has run it in the NFL. Teams to try to copy, but nobody ran it as well as Miami when Miami first started it back. I think that 2008 season that Tom Brady was injured. And, you know, it's a pretty good offense. The defenses have caught on to it as it happens all the time in the NFL. You know, offensive coordinator comes up with a gimmick takes the defense maybe a year or maybe less than that to catch up with it, catch up to it, and then you have to basically judiciously decide when you're going to use it. It can't be a part of your offense to a point to where you are somewhat dependent on it. It has to be something that, you know, you want to, like, change, you know, the pace of your offense. You want to throw a monkey wrench into what you want to give the defense something else to think about. It's just something. It can't be something that, again, that's necessary for your offense to function if you're running the Wildcat. It can't be. Because, again, defenses have, to me, completely caught up with it, and I don't see how it can be effective. But that's the reason why they said they got Tim Tebow. You bring Tim Tebow in to a situation where you have a shaky, and I mean shaky at best, starting quarterback who you just gave a 3-year, $40 million extension to. Again, I don't know what message are you sending to Mark Sanchez. You know, one hand you give him an extension, next hand you bring in Tim Tebow. But that's the Jets right now. That's Rex Ryan right now. And so what you're really saying to me is that you don't have a quarterback. Because if Tebow, again, Mike Cannavale comes out there and basically said, hey, you know, Tebow, if Mark has a few 3-and-outs here and Tebow comes in and does well, you know, anything's fine, which was stupid, by the way. I mean, it didn't make any sense. You're just giving your quarterback, again, and a contract extension. So the Jets, again, the Jets are all over the place right now with how their franchise is being run. Bringing Tebow into that locker room, where that was one of these worst locker rooms in all of football, with Santonio Holmes, with no leadership, with people not even respect. People don't even respect Mark Sanchez as the quarterback, as the quarterback of that team. We had guys out here calling him out for his work ethic. You have Rex Ryan, who, you know, allows anything to go on. You know, has a laissez-faire for that. So, okay, players police themselves, and what have you. And then you come in with Tebow and all the extra that he brings to New York City at that. I just don't get the logic in it. I don't understand this trade. I don't. And right, the opposite end of that spectrum is the Denver Broncos, who accomplished everything they wanted to accomplish. They give Peyton Manning. They give up Tim, and they get Peyton Manning. And they get rid of Tim Tebow, and they get draft picks in doing so. I mean, if you're a Denver Broncos fan, yeah, I mean, sure, Peyton Manning is a risk with Manning, as we all know. But you got rid of Tim Tebow. You don't have to deal with that anymore. And we all know that John Elway, John Fox never wanted Tebow. They never wanted him on that team. Never. And they did a great job to kind of get to the playoffs. Fox did a great job in adjusting, you know, what his philosophy was to what Tebow could do or could not do. But to me, they got the best. I mean, Denver has to be smiling right now, not having to deal with Tim Tebow and all the questions that come with Tim Tebow and just everything that comes with him. I mean, Tim Tebow. Have you ever seen a press conference for the backup quarterback? Because I haven't. I've never seen a press conference for a backup quarterback. Never. But that's Tim Tebow. I mean, he's the most polarizing figure in the NFL right now, clearly. Getting to the Manning situation in Denver, listen, I think Manning's best option as far as if he wanted to win a Super Bowl was clearly San Francisco. I think this is Manning hedging his bet yes, the team is, you know, the team is good enough to a point where we will compete, one, but at the same time, it's not all on me. All eyes are not going to be on me in terms of winning the Super Bowl. Had he went to San Francisco and, you know, put it up to you this way. These are the differences between situations. He goes to Denver, they make it to the AFC Championship. He's a borderline hero, okay? He's a borderline hero. He goes to San Francisco, they make it to the NFC Championship. We did this last year with Alex Smith. We paid you $95 million to what? To be status quo? No. So I don't think that Manning wanted that pressure. I mean, you hear in the press conference, and I wish I had that clip on me, where, you know, we're all in this together, the running backs, they have a good defense, the coaches, the this, the that, just everything, but basically except Peyton Manning. I mean, he mentioned himself, of course, saying how big his role is going to be, but he's like, I can't do this alone, and just talk that you wouldn't normally hear out of a guy who is one touchdown away from 400 career touchdown passes and who and still has the opportunity to be statistically the greatest quarterback of all time from a stats standpoint. Which tells me that, I'm not sure about the confidence that he has in himself to be able to get it done. Like, you know, he thinks it's there, but it might not be there. All of it might not be there. Like, he's kind of like, I don't know, a building excuse, hedging his bet. He's kind of hedging his bet. And I think the move to Denver was a hedging his bet move. And it didn't hurt that John Elway, that you have John Elway, who obviously one of the top quarterbacks of all time, telling you how great you are and, you know, how much he can relate. And he can relate being an older quarterback, trying to win a Super Bowl and things of that nature. That certainly helped out. And also certainly the fact that familiarity, not wanting to lead the AFC, he knows the defenses, he knows the personnel, not wanting to be in the same conference as Eli Manning. And so it was sure, maybe he likes Denver's public school system. As one athlete that went to Colorado one time said, Mike Hampton. I don't know. But the point is, again, if he wanted the best chance to win a Super Bowl, the move to go was San Francisco. 18 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, when we return, we will finish where we started. That's with the NCAA tournament. We'll talk and we will preview the Elite Eight as we draw closer and closer towards the Final Four in New Orleans, which will, of course, take place next weekend. We'll be right back.
Coming at you with music and fun. And if you're not careful, you may learn something before it's done.
Hey, 20 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, as we look ahead towards a big weekend of sports. A lot to do. Again, you got the NCAA tournament. You have Tiger Woods in contention or leading, tied with Charlie Weed for the lead at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. You know, some of the baseball stuff, Jabba Chamberlain, you know, ankle dislocation. So a lot going on. Heat and Oklahoma City play tomorrow night, so that's certainly one of those rare regular season games that you probably have to tune in to watch. Those two right now are the favorites to make it amongst the favorites, along with Chicago, San Antonio, and Lakers, to make it to the NBA Finals. So, again, a lot going on, especially with the NFL, the Saints, Tebow, Peyton Manning, a lot going on in the world of sports. But we'll begin, we'll end where we started, NCAA tournament, a great night, Friday night of college basketball. All four games competitive, two of them. You had a classic with North Carolina and Ohio going to overtime. North Carolina hanging on by its fingernails to avoid being upset by Ohio. Again, showing you how much Kendall Marshall means to that team. You know, I heard Charles Barkley trying to downplay his importance, saying, you know, he's probably the fifth best player on the team, which, first of all, is a bunch of nonsense. He's not the fifth best player on that team. Like, Kendall Marshall is a sophomore, is a legit 6'4 guard who, I mean, the guy, like, I mean, he could be, he stays on 1 year, he'll be a top five pick next year. He's improved his jump shot. He can, I mean, he's as good as passer as it is in college basketball. So, fifth best player on the team, I thought that was, I don't know if I agree with that. I understand what Barker was trying to say, but the point is, he is by far and away their most important player on that team. They do not look like, they played without John Henson against NC State and beat NC State and could have easily beat Florida State in the ACC championship. Well, John Henson didn't play in either one of those games. Kendall Marshall, last night, they easily could have lost that game to Ohio without Kendall Marshall. Ohio was about 4, 3 minutes left. You know, guy missed a free throw. Ohio kind of, you know, the moment might have got too big for Ohio. And, you know, and North Carolina was able to survive. But they did not play well last night. And that offense, listen, when they don't get easy points, they can struggle to score without question. Tyler Zeller, 20 points, 23 rebounds, 4 block shots, was a man amongst boys last night. Didn't get the ball enough. Harrison Barnes was awful in that game. And it's funny because you watch Harrison Barnes and you talk about the NBA and, you know, you try to project these guys, what they're going to be at the next level. You watch Harrison Barnes play, then you watch Michael Kidd, Greg Gilchrist play, and you see why Kidd Gilchrist is projected to be the number 2 pick in the draft behind Anthony Davis. I mean, their talent basically is equal. And then Barnes, you know, you can make a case that Barnes has more talent than Kidd Gilchrist, but Kidd Gilchrist just plays with much more intensity and ferocity that Barnes at times lack, and sometimes he's too cool. He was awful last night, took bad shots, just looked like his head wasn't in the game. 3-16, did have one particular sequence, though, that was important. That to me was a key sequence in the game where North Carolina's down by 4. He misses the front end of a one. He misses he splits the free throws, makes one, then gets a rebound, missing the second one, and hits a 3. Big sequence in that game to tie the game. Reggie Bullock, again, made some big shots in that game. To me, was by far and away the MVP. Oh, well, not, I shouldn't say by far and away, but was, along with Tyler Zeller, the MVP of that game, was a huge, again, hit some huge shots. North Carolina takes over in overtime and pulls away with an 8-point victory. They will go on to meet Kansas. Kansas looked bad, didn't look good as well against NC State. Kansas almost, you know, basically tried to give the game away to NC State in the last 3 or 4 minutes with some of the shot selection, turnovers, missed free throws. Tyshawn Taylor continues to struggle. NC State, you know, easily could have won that game, but Kansas survives to play North Carolina. It's going to be a very interesting game with Kansas and North Carolina because neither team is playing well right now. Kansas should win based on the fact that North Carolina is playing without Kendall Marshall. And Kansas has good guards. So, like, Kansas actually deserves to be favored. But to me, it's a pickup game because North Carolina still has a superior front court. Remember, North Carolina was in the Elite Eight last year. Both these teams were in the Elite Eight last year as they both lost to VCU and Kentucky. And again, this is one of those games. I don't have a good feel on this game. I don't like the way North Carolina played last night, but I don't like the way Kansas played either. I mean, to be honest with you, but if you made me choose, I probably had to lean towards Kansas based on the fact that they have superior guard play, especially at the point guard position with Tyshawn Taylor. But it certainly would not surprise me either way in that game. I think it will be a very highly competitive game between those two historic schools. Of course, you'll have the second. Of course, tonight, Syracuse, Ohio State. Very interesting to see if Ohio State can make enough outside shots to kind of loosen up the Syracuse zone. I kind of like Syracuse in this spot. I thought Syracuse is, they had a taste with death, so to speak, in the Wisconsin game. Normally, when teams have played that type of game, they come back and respond with a big game because they've been basically at the abyss to where they almost got eliminated. So I expect Syracuse to play well and take out Ohio State. Louisville versus Florida. Louisville is the best. They say Kentucky is one of the best defensive teams in the country. I think Louisville is the best defensive team remaining in this tournament, and I expect them to fully suffocate Florida's 3-point shooters. I like Louisville in that game. I think Florida has gone as far as they're going to go. Great coaching matchup with the mentor, the student versus teacher, mentor versus pupil. In terms of Patino, Billy Donovan. Donovan, of course, was on that with Patino 1988 team at Providence that really introduced the 3-point shot as a weapon back then. Also was an assistant with Patino at Kentucky for a while before Donovan went on to make his own name and actually has won more championships than Patino with the back-to-back championships in 06, 07 at Florida. So, very interesting game from that standpoint. I like Louisville and Syracuse. Baylor, Kentucky. Baylor has the athletes to stay with Kentucky. They do. This will be a close game. Baylor has an NBA caliber front line. They have guards. They have Haslam who can shoot the lights out. They have a good point guard. Baylor has the talent to beat Kentucky, but I just don't think they have the consistency. I'll take Kentucky in that game. Very close game. That will be a track meet as well because Baylor likes to get up and down the court. That will be a track meet. That game, expect that game to be played in the 80s to early 90s. Fully expect that game to be played in the 80s. So that will be certainly an exciting game. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be an exciting weekend of college basketball as we head towards the Final Four. Kentucky, to me, based on what they did last night, and more importantly, based on the Kendall Marshall injury, clear favorites to win the national championship from moving on from here on out, without a question. But let's not crown them yet. Calipari certainly is capable of screwing it up, as we've seen them have big time teams before. So we'll see what happens here. But all signs point to a Kentucky championship. I mean, that's what things point to right now. That's going to wrap it up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Still deciding whether or not to do a program tomorrow after the regional finals. I might still has, especially after the Kansas North Carolina game. So stay tuned for that. So long.